All right, let's go, guys. We're going to start off with... All right, we're going to start off with... Is this going? Yeah. Parshas Shmos. Chazal say that everything in the Torah was written for a reason, for us to learn something from. This is very, very strange. You start off at the beginning of this week's Parsha. Starts off and it says, Ve'ele Shmos B'nei Yisrael Habayim Yitzrayim. These are the names of B'nei Yisrael that came down to Mitzrayim. It's Yaakov Ishu Beso Banu. Yaakov Ishu Beso Bo, the man and his house all came. Reuven, Shimon, Levi,
Yehuda,
V'Yisachar, Yisvulun, Uvin Yamin, Dom and Naphtali, Gad V'Asher. You didn't know the names yet? We didn't know the names? You couldn't have figured that out? We had them for the four past parshas. We've had all these guys. All of a sudden you're sitting there like, oh, the Shvatim, I remember them. They're, give me a second. Of course you're going to know who they are. Why in the world does the parsha have to go over them all over again? Say every single one of them all over again. What is the point? Also, last week's parsha ends on a very weird note. By Yomas Yosef b'meiv asher shanim, Yosef died at the age of 110. By Yachan tuoso, they embalmed him. By Yisim ba'arom b'mitzrayim, they put him in a coffin in Mitzrayim. They put him in a coffin in Egypt. What is up with this? Why do we care that Yosef died? I understand he died. Okay, I understand that. But you're going to end off the parsha with that and connect it to the beginning of Shmos? What's the connection? There's always something called smuchim, which is a connection from the end of last week's parsha to the beginning of this week's parsha. What is a smuchim, and why do we care? The pshat is like this. We know that Israel did five things, and thus they were able to be saved out of Mitzrayim. What were the five things that they did? We know the famous three. They didn't change their
names.
They didn't change their
language.
And they didn't change their
clothes.
Name, clothing, and language. Those three things they never changed. You should know. Out of all the midrashim that mentioned this, it's about 10 midrashim that mentioned the reasons why they didn't leave Mitzrayim. None of them mentioned these three together. They mentioned two of them. Some of them also mentioned only one of them. But none of them mentioned all three of them together. There's another two that are mentioned. They didn't have Gilui Arayos, meaning they weren't together with the Egyptian woman, and they weren't even together with their own woman, meaning they didn't intermarry with one. They weren't over on Znus with Eishes Ish. And number five, they didn't have any Lashon Hara. They didn't speak any Lashon Hara. Big things. These are big things over here. Five major things that were able to save them from going out of Mitzrayim. We're going to concentrate on one of those things over here. They didn't change their names. Somebody did. He was actually the first person to go down to Mitzrayim. Who's the first person to go down to Mitzrayim?
Yeah.
Yosef. Yosef changed his name too. Sofnas Paneach. Sofnas Paneach. He was changed his name.
Is that a name?
The whole
title?
Thing. I don't understand. It was a
Yaakov
name that was
Yisrael.
Used by him. Yeah, but that's a good name. Meaning God changed that name. We're talking about a name which you changed to Egyptian names. You changed from a Hebrew name to an Egyptian name. What in the world is up with that? Sofnas Paneach. You're going to go on and change it. Why did Yosef change it? And if anything, look at what happens over here. Elish Shmos Ben Yisrael. Now look at these words. Elish Shmos Ben Yisrael. Boyim Mitzrayim. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, Binyamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Vasher. Yosef Haya B'Mitzrayim. Is that an excuse? These are the names of B'nai Yisrael. Their names didn't change. Haboyim Mitzrayim. They came down to Mitzrayim. They came down to Mitzrayim with these names. And they left with these names. They never changed it. They kept these names the entire time. But Yosef Haya B'Mitzrayim. Is that supposed to be an excuse? He's okay. He was in Egypt. He's fine. He's okay. So you can change it then? What in the world? How could that be? How could it work that way? It's machlokes about that. But how could that be? Shad is, that's why Vayomas Yosef is written right next to Ve'elish Shmos B'nei Yisrael. Yosef told them, I'm Yosef. I go by Yosef. Do the Mitzrayim call me Tzofnas Paneach? Yes. But when I introduce myself as Yosef. I don't let people call me Tzofnas Paneach unless I have to let them call me Tzofnas Paneach. I didn't change my name because I wanted to. I changed my name because Paro made me change my name. But I'm not called by that name. Throughout the entire Torah, he's always known as Yosef. Vayamas Yosef. Yosef spoke to the brothers. They said back to Yosef. They did this. He's always known as Yosef. Thus, Vayamas Yosef, he died, and he told them, Elish Shmos B'nei Yisrael, listen guys, the way to be saved, the way for you to be Matzliach when you're in Mitzrayim, keep your Jewish identity. Keep your names. Keep your names around. It's an unbelievable thing. It's something that Yosef taught them over anything else, and that's the connection between the two. This is huge. That's the way to survive Golus. To have an identity, to know that you're a Jew. But, I mean, go outside to those little black things, the little black names that you have all over the place, all over in that hallway over there. Go look at all those names over there. I want you to go look at all of them. Try to find me five of them where the Hebrew name matches the English. Try to find me five of them. Tzvi? Could be Steve, could be Harry, could be John, could be anything. Could be anything, but it's not Svi. You'll not find one Svi there that's translated as ZVI or TZVI. They're all translated into an English name. I'm not saying it's a terrible, terrible thing, but the fact is, the way to keep the identity is keeping that around. And thus, because we don't have that identity, look at our intermarriage problem, our intermarriage rate. Because we mix in with everybody else. Like, if our names are the same as theirs, then why not? Don't we say it this way? But Jack can marry Jane. Why not? But Jack is Jewish. He's real Yaakov. And he can marry Jane. He's got a name like Jack. That's okay. Goes with J's. J-A's. It works out together.
So
that's the idea. The idea is to stand for the Shabbos, for the Shemos together. Now, it happens to be, I'm not telling anyone here that they got to change their names. You know what I'm saying? There are people, it's a nice thing, but that's not saying that every single person here should go home and be like, that's it, I'm not being known as Jack anymore. I'm not being known as Yaakov Meise and go by Yaakov Moshe for the rest of your life. I'm not saying that you have to do that. It's just the idea behind it. If you're going to name your kids, you don't have to name them an English name. An English name only messes them up, gets them further away from what we know as our private identity as Jews. Why name them an English name if you don't need to? There's no need for it. What, you're afraid that throughout his entire life he won't be able to, he can't go by Tzvi, he'll never be able to be successful if he goes by Tzvi? These guys are in the Senate with the names Abdul Mahmoud Arif. If they're not embarrassed, and they got these crazy names, look at us. Why can't we do it? If there's a guy out there whose name is God Sham God, you know, the guy who's whatever, the basketball player who played for, was, dude, Cal. You, Cal. God, Shem, God. You don't think he was embarrassed every time he walked on the court? Like, called him, hey, God's out there. That must have been the lamest joke in the world. But everybody, you know, it's just, after a while, you get used to the name, and people get used to it. There's no difference nowadays. It doesn't make a difference. But Shmos also stands for something else. Shin, Mem, Vav, Tav. Stands for Shabbos, Mila, Utfilin. Shabbos, Mila, and Tefillin are the three things that are known as osios, signs that a Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us. You're supposed to have two of them at all times. At all times. Thus, Bris Mila is with us at all times. It's automatic. During the week, we have Tefillin. We should be wearing Tefillin all day, but we don't. And on Shabbos, you don't wear Tefillin because you have Shabbos. So at all times, you'll have two Adim. You'll either have Shabbos and Mila, or you have Tefillin and Mila at all times. That's why by a Bris Mila, when a kid is getting a Bris Mila, a lot of people there wear Tefillin. The Bala Bris is supposed to wear Tefillin. Said he's wearing the Tefillin with the Bris that's going on there. So they're two Adim. They're two osios that are together over there. Those osios were supposed to save us out of Mitzrayim. That saves us from every goal. So we keep Shabbos, we have Bris Mila, and we put on Tefillin. That's going to keep us from every goal. Keep us away from every goal. So the problem was, did the Jews do that? No. Lost Bris Mila. Shabbos was not kept as the Shabbos that we know is later on. Moshe Rabbeinu did give them Shabbos, Saturdays off, but they didn't give them anything more than that. They didn't know what to really do on Shabbos, although there is a Medrash that's quoted down by the notes of the Baal Torah and the Ramban that says that they had a Sefer Torah. They did have a Sefer Torah. What they read in there was the histories of the Avos, and they read from it every Shabbos. So they did have the idea of Kriyas HaTorah before, you know, before we had an actual Torah. But regardless, they had that. There was Shabbos. And the Mila, they stopped doing. They stopped doing Bris Mila. Obviously, they didn't have Tefillin. So they didn't have that. So why in the world are they going to be saved? And that was really Moshe Rabbeinu's problem. Why in the world should these people be saved if they don't have Shmos? If they don't have Shabbos, Mila, and Tefillin, then why in the world should we bother saving them? To that, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say his name was going to be when he wanted to save them? Eyah. Is that a weird name? Why Eyah? It's known as Havaya, Yud Kei Vav Kei. We have that all over the place. We have Adnos, Aleph Dalet Nun Yod all over the place. Elokim, that's good. Shakai, Shin Dalet Yod, that's a nice name. Tzvaos, we have those all over the place. Heya? What in the world is Aleph Hey Yud Hey? What does that stand for? What's that doing there? You know what it is? Heya is a Gematria 21. Gematria 21 comes in two different places. Number one, the first letters of every sefer in the Torah. Bereshit starts off with a beis. Ve'ela Shmo starts off with a vav. Vayikra starts with a vav. Ve'ela Vayomer Hashem al Moshe b'midbar Sinai starts with a vav. That's vav plus vav plus vav is 18. Plus 2 from Bereshit is 20. Plus Ela Hadvarim, the beginning of Dvarim, which is 1, is 21. The shame of 21. And Ayez Aglacha 21. The Avos. Name of Avram starts off with an? Yitzchak. Yeah. Yaakov. Yeah. 21! I think it's just coincidental. Why would Bnei Yisrael saved from Mitzrayim? Says the Gemara, saved out of Mitzrayim. Says the Gemara, they didn't deserve to be saved, but they had Zchus Avos, and the Zchus that were going to get the Torah. From the fact that they had Zchus Avos to begin with, and they had the Zchus Torah that they were going to get the Torah in the end, those two 21s came together, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you know who I am? I'm Ayah, Asher Ayah. Not just one Ayah, it's a double Ayah. The Ayah in the beginning, meaning the Avos saved us in the beginning, and in the end, you know why we're going to be saved? Because we're going to get the Torah. The Torah, which is 21, and the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is 21. From the Avos, that's going to be the savior of Bnei Yisrael. Why? Because they couldn't keep the Shmos. They couldn't keep the Shabbos Milu Tefillin. So therefore, you know what Bnei Yisrael called when we're in Gullus? We're called roses. Shoshanim. I heard this from Matisseo Solomon 2 years ago, but it's an unbelievable shot. Where are we called Shoshanim? Think about it. Where have we known, where do you know Shoshanim or Shoshanim?
Sure.
Hanukkah by where?
Oh, Moser.
Minosar kan kanim, from the remaining parts of the kan of the bottle. Nasa ne slash shoshanim. A miracle happened for the shoshanim, for the roses. And that refers to Bnei Yisrael. Where's the other place that we have it?
Purim.
Where? Shoshanas Yaakov. Shoshanas Yaakov. The two places, Purim and Hanukkah, right? They were both saving us out of Golus. And yet, did we deserve it? Absolutely not. We didn't deserve it, but we were still a rose. We had beautiful petals. We looked gorgeous on the outside. We still had people that were great among us. Tremendous things. We still had Shabbos, Mila, and Tefillin. Those were three things that we had. So therefore, we were Shoshanas Yaakov. We were a rose. What's in the bottom of a rose? I remember this. Every Friday, I go and I get flowers. Usually, I get roses. I get them for Shabbos. Every single time, on the biggest idiot in the world, I always grab it from the bottom. And I sit there and I'm like, ah! Every single time, because I get thorned all over my hand. Roses are unbelievable. They're beautiful on the outside. They're beautiful on the top. But on the bottom, they're full of thorns all over the place. It's the sharpest thing in the world. It hurts you when you touch it. So too, Bnei Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael, beautiful on the outside. So everybody wants to come near us, to touch us, to come somewhere near us. They touch us, and immediately they hit themselves on the thorn and get themselves blood. That's what ends up happening. That's a Shoshana. So by the miracle of Hanukkah and the miracle of Purim, they tried touching us. They tried grabbing us and knocking out the rose. To that, they got their hands knocked down. Hanukkah, all the Greeks went down, all the Amalekim went down by Purim. It was an unbelievable thing. Here in Mitzrayim, they didn't even have the rose. They didn't have the Shabbos Milo Tefillin. Therefore, what were they? Just thorns. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Moshe Rabbeinu, who told them the shame of Ayah, he appeared to him in what? A thorn bush known as a sneh. Just the thorns, no rose. No rose. That's a shot behind that. There's a little bit more to it with the fire and everything like that. I happen to like that one. That's a really good word. But regardless, let's tell over a story. Guys, relax a little bit. Let's tell over a little story.
That's the one everybody liked.
I'm going to tell you a little story. This is the one that the people liked. Yeah. This idea is like this. Seder Adoro says, after Esav was killed, the Maros Machpelah, we know from last week that Maros Machpelah, oh, did I say this one last week? I didn't tell you guys about Maros Machpelah, where Esav was killed. By the way, Hushim ben Dun killed him. He knocked off his head. And then afterward, he was still rolling around. He was walking around because his body was still alive and without his head. Either way, so Yehuda chopped him up into little pieces and killed him completely. That's Tosfos isn't getting a nun hay. Regardless, after that all happened, Eliphaz and Amalek decided to start a fight. Because Esav was killed, Eliphaz and Amalek decided to start a fight against all the Bnei Yisrael and the Mitzrayim that were still there at the Kavur of Yaakov. So on the way back, they started this fight. Bnei Yisrael were still able to win, even though they had no Nevuah because they were very, very sad. Still, they were able to win. And Tzfo, who was one of the grandsons of Esav, he's not mentioned in the Torah, but he was one of the grandsons of Esav, was captured by the Bnei Yaakov and brought down to Mitzrayim. He was put in jail and kept in jail for 40 years until Yosef HaTzadik died. After Yosef HaTzadik died, Tzfo was released out of jail, and he was released out of jail, I don't know if he escaped or whatever it was, and he ran down to Afriki. Afriki is the southern kingdom of Mitzrayim. That is the southern kingdom. If anybody knows the history of Egypt, there are two kingdoms, the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. The northern kingdom is the one that was destroyed and decimated, and the southern kingdom moved up and became the new Egyptians afterward. This is after Bnei Yisrael left. Either way, regardless, the southern kingdom is known as Afriki. They're known as Afriki. So he went down to Afriki and tried to convince the king of Afriki to fight the Mitzrayim in order to get revenge on the Jews. So the king of Afriki went to a 12-year-old child to ask that 12-year-old child what he thought, because this 12-year-old child was known to have prophecy and was known to be a very, very big guy. So they asked him, what do you think? And Bilam answered him. Bilam told him, don't fight them, you're going to be destroyed. You're going to be destroyed. Very good. Bilam was the guy, the 12-year-old. He said, don't fight them, you're going to be destroyed. So Tzfo was kicked out of Afriki and he was sent out. He went out to somewhere else. He went to the Kitim. We don't know where the Kitim are exactly. They're somewhere in southern Europe. And he was walking around. He became a cattle herder, a regular cattle herder, and was making a lot of money. One time, one of his cows ran away and ran behind a little bit of a cave. So he chased after it. And listen to this magic. Seder Adoros brings this down. It's unbelievable. He saw, standing behind the cave, a massive creature that was half human, half wild animal. And he picked up the entire ox and was eating it and putting it inside its huge, huge mouth. Tzfo was so shocked by it that he threw his spear at it. So shocked that he threw his spear, and it hit exactly in the right spot where it was supposed to hit, and the guy died. And the guy died, or whatever this creature was, died. Tzfo ran to the town and told everybody what had just happened. And he said, oh, you've killed the crazy monster that has plagued us for years already. And his fame went out throughout the entire land, and he eventually became the king of the Kitim. King of the Kitim. One time, somebody who was very jealous of him decided to fight a war against him. He brought 800,000 men to fight against Tzfo and 3,000 of men of Tzfo. Tzfo saw he was losing, so he started davening to Hashem and said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please save me bizchus, my great grandfather Yaakov Avinu. Please save me bizchuso, in his chus. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu let him win with the 3,000 people. All the 800,000 people were decimated. 3,000 people won. Because of that, he thanked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but then right afterward, forgot all about God. He said, yeah, I'm great, I'm good, I'm the one that did everything. Then he started to gather together. Finally, his plan was starting to form to wage war against Mitzrayim. Gather together B'nai Yishmael, B'nai Esav, and the B'nai Kedar, B'nai Kedem, all the way in the east. All those guys together and decided, we're getting a huge army, we're going to fight Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim didn't know why they were fighting. They didn't realize that it was because of the Jews. They thought that they were just fighting Mitzrayim to get the treasures of Yosef HaTzadik. They sent out a massive army. The problem was that Egypt's army was a very inexperienced army. They had never fought before because nobody ever fought Egypt. They were the rich people. So their army was a very inexperienced army. They had a lot of people. They had a lot of weapons and everything like that. But they didn't know what to do. They had 150 Jews who stood at the very end, who were like the weapon carriers and stuff like that. 150 Jews who weren't allowed to fight because the Egyptians were afraid the 150 Jews would join the other side and go up against them. So they wouldn't allow those guys to fight. Mitzrayim started to fight and immediately started to retreat. They couldn't do it. So they called out to the 150 Jews and said, you hold them off. You guys hold them off while we go back and get reinforcements. 150 Jews are like, we're 150 people. There's thousands of guys out there that want to fight us. Why in the world would we do that? The Egyptians said, go anyway. The 150 Jews went out. They davened into HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and immediately they were able to destroy the entire army of Tzvo. They killed Tzvo. They killed down a bunch of people. And they were able to destroy most of what they were going to do. On their way back, they were so mad at the Egyptians that they accidentally killed 200 Mitzrayim. Thinking to themselves, oh, thought you were them. I went ahead and killed those 200 guys. When they came back and Paro heard everything that had happened, he realized two things. Number one, he's got to set up a defense mechanism. Pisom and Ramses, which were the easternmost cities of Mitzrayim, had to be built up with a huge wall so that they'd be protected from now on from any wars that would be coming from that side. That's number one. Number two, these Jews are crazy. These Jews are absolutely crazy. They're able to do anything. And he said, that's his problem. And he says, hold on one second, Havanis Kakmalos, be wise with them. Penirba, maybe they'll become too many. When there is another war, they're going to end up going up against us. They'll wage war against us, and they'll just go away. That's the shot behind this whole pasuk, because of this maisa that happened right beforehand. Yeah.
Wasn't it murder for them to kill the 200 Mitzrayim, since against the other guys, their lives were in danger?
I definitely hear the question. I do not have an answer to that question. It's a good question. You'd have to say there was a reason for why they killed them. I have absolutely no idea what to say. But yeah. Yeah, but that's not enough usually. But yeah. No, they had a lot more, but these 150 were just the weapon carriers. I guess the guys who knew how to use these weapons or whatever it is. But those are the guys who were special weapon carriers. That was that. That's the beginning of the parsha. Another shot that's mentioned is an unbelievable shot. V'yid gulurov b'karav ha'aretz. We all know that from Hamalach HaGoelosi. No need to sing. That, guys, you don't need to sing. But either way, the Yigul Rov, the Karav Haaretz, at the very end, is the Yigul Rov, that they will be like fish, multiply like fish, the Karav Haaretz in the middle of the land. Says a Medrash, Kli Yucker mentions this, that what happened was when anybody tried to hurt a Jew, the Jews would immediately be swallowed up by the ground, and in the ground there would be a massive hole, and a Malach would come down and give them milk and honey and everything else that they needed and everything else for them to live. And years later, after 10 or 15 years or whatever, the kids would pop up out of the ground and be like, hey, mom, dad, I'm back. And everything would be fine. And nobody knew what happened. All of a sudden, Paro was looking at these kids popping up from the ground. Popping up out of the ground. He's like, what in the world? So the pshat is, says the Rabbeinu Ephraim, V'nilchambanu, nosav gamu asoneinu, maybe they're going to add on to our enemies, V'nilchambanu, v'ala min aretz. And who knows how many kids are stuck in the ground? There could be hundreds of thousands of kids that are stuck in the ground. I don't know what's going on over here. There's all these little kids coming out of the ground. It's that the Rabbeinu Ephraim was a Rishon, took a shot from the Kli Yucker, which is an Acharon. He gives a whole shot. I was shocked by that. Regardless, that's the whole shot over there. Now, we're going to skip over this thing right now. I'm going to tell you guys over a board. But you have to know five things to know this board. This is an unbelievable board. And I'm telling you right now, I know what I say every week. I say this is my favorite board, whatever. I'm telling you right now, this is my absolute favorite board. There is nothing like this ever throughout anywhere. No. This is by far my favorite board. Where is this? Okay, we'll just say it on this. Five akdamas. Number one akdama is the following. Number one akdama. There's a pasuk in the Torah in the beginning of in Noah. Shofech dama adam, ba'adam damu yishafech. If you kill somebody, ba'adam damu yishafech, your blood will be spilled back. Meaning, if A kills B, B will have to kill A. I realize, oh, is it possible? B's dead. Good question.
Well, there's the letter, a Gilgul. The letter.
By Gilgul, you have to say that B is going to have to come back. B is going to have to come back somehow and somehow kill A. Which means, Cain killed Hevel. Somehow, Hevel is going to have to kill Cain. That's number one. First thing you have to know is Hevel killed Cain, killed Hevel. Hevel's going to have to kill Cain. Number two. Number two. Kishiva Sayim Yukum Cain. Kishiva Sayim Yukum Cain. In seven generations, Cain will get up again. Says Chazal, Yukum stands for the three different parts of Cain. The Cain went into Yisro, Korach, and the Mitzri, the Ish Mitzri. This one Ish Mitzri that we know Moshe Rabbeinu killed. Okay, that's number two. Number three, the third thing we have to know is, I missed the other one. Moshe is also, we know this from before, is Moshe, Shase, and Hevel. Now all of a sudden we're figuring out something over here. Cain is the Mitzri. Moshe is Hevel. Okay, figure that out so far. There's a whole shot behind it. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu killed the Mitzri with the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Killed with the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So why? So there were three things that Cain did that they had to be fixed up. How many parts of the Neshama there is? Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama. There's a Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama. There are three parts to the soul. All three things had three different sins. There were three different sins that were involved here. The Nefesh, there were three sins that Cain did to Hevel. What were the three sins? The number one thing is he killed Hevel. Right? That's an obvious one. The other thing that he did was he was jealous of Hevel. That was the second thing. And a third thing that he did was he stole the second twin. We know that Hevel was born with two twin sisters. Cain was born with one. One of the fights that Cain and Hevel had, according to the Medrash, was that Cain said, I'm the firstborn, I get double portion, I get two of the sisters. Hevel said, no, both of them were born with me, I get both of the sisters. They got into that fight, and that led to this whole fight. So Neshama stole the second twin. Each one of these has to be fixed up. The Nefesh will be by the Mitzri. The jealousy, Korach. The stolen of the second twin is going to be Yisro. Now listen to what happened over here. Mitzri, just like Cain killed Hevel, the Mitzri is going to have to be killed by
Moshe
Rabbeinu. However, it's got to be the exact opposite way. Why did Cain kill Hevel? Out of hatred. Pure, pure hatred. Hevel can't kill Cain out of hatred. It can't be out of that. He's going to do it out of love. He's got to do it out of love. You know how you do it? Vayach es ha-Mitzri vayitmeneu b'chol. Vayach es hamitzri, vayitmeneu b'chol. The first letters of each one is ahuvo, his loved one. He loves him. He loves him. Why does he love him? Because when you kill somebody with the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it sends him up to a level of Olam Haba that he never would have gotten to before. Killing with a shame of Hashem is a very powerful tool. It's not like killing him stam. It's bringing him up to a higher level. So when he killed the Mitzri that way, he brought him up to a crazy high level. He brought the Neshama of Cain, the Nefesh of Cain, to a higher level.
50 level
too. He was allowed to bring him up because it's the Nefesh of Cain. Cain is out there and Moshe Rabbeinu wants to be metakin it. To fix it up, the way to do that is to do it by doing ahuvo. To fix him up and to kill him out of love. Do it in a good way instead of in a bad way. That's number one. The other one, stolen the second twin, that also happened. Yes, that second twin happened to be a little girl by the name of Tzipporah. Thus, Yisro, what he had to do was give over Tzipporah over to Moshe Rabbeinu, which he did. Moshe got Tzipporah. And not only that, what was Hevel doing? Hevel was a what?
Shepherd,
right? Yisro had the sheep. He had the sheep of Cain, had the sheep of Hevel. He had to give back the sheep over to Hevel. He had to give it all over again. There's another big thing about that. But regardless, Moshe got Tzipporah. The last thing was the jealousy. The whole tikkun was supposed to be that Korach was going to be jealous of Moshe Rabbeinu, but Korach would get over the jealousy. That was going to be the idea. Did Korach do that?
No.
He didn't get over it. Because of that, it was X'd, and from that comes a good person. I think you guys have heard of him before. His name is Yeshu. Good old JC. Good old JC, but we'll go into that by Korach. That's another story altogether. It's an unbelievable thing by Yeshu, but that's the third thing over here. That's the Nefesh, the Ruach, and the Neshama. So he had to do all three things, and that's what he was doing over here. Now,
wasn't he that guy?
What? You know him. You've heard of him before. He is that guy. He's that guy. That guy. Anyway, the idea is yes. So either way, the idea is like, we have so far gone through that. Number four. The fourth thing we have to know is Cain is also known as the Satan. The Satan was involved in Cain. Cain was the Satan. It's a tremendous thing. There's no gematria going on over here. It's the Satan. The Satan is also known as, we know many times, as the Sam. The Sam, right? We quite know him as Sam. The Sam Amavis, the Sam Amavis, he's out there. Hevel was born with a Mila. Hevel was born with a Mila. We come from Shais, not from Kayin. But either way, he was born with a Mila. The difference between Moshe and Hevel, Moshe was also born with a Mila, is that Moshe was also born with a Mila. However, his father Amram gave him Hatofas Dam Bris. He had on a little tiny cut, which you're supposed to do if you're born with a bris, halavai. If we were born with a bris, you still have to give a little tiny cut. That little tiny cut over there, that's hatafa. Moshe Rabbeinu had hatafas dam bris, Hevel didn't. The last thing that you have to know is number five, a chassan is without kids. An ish has kids. So the difference between a chassan, which is first year of marriage, you know, there's a chassan, oh, chassan. There's a chassan. It's with somebody without kids, hopefully. An ish is somebody who has kids. An ish is somebody who has kids. Now, we have all five of these things right here. Now that you have this akdama, listen to what happens over here. We have a pasuk, Perek Dalid, pasuk Chav Dalid. I'm going to tell you guys over this pasuk. You try to tell me what it's talking about. Perek Dalid, pasuk, you know what? Even better. I'm going to read you the pasuk in English. How you translate it in English? Perek Dalid, pasuk Chav Dalid. You guys try telling me what's going on over here. Pasuk says, Vayibaderech b'malon, he was on the way to the by the inn. Vayivkesheyu Hashem, God met up with him. Vayivakesh hamiso, and he wanted to kill him. Rashi says it was a huge snake. Satan came in the form of the snake and started to swallow Moshe Rabbeinu. It says Rashi, he swallowed him from the top down up until the bris milah, and he couldn't get any further. Spit him out, went from the bottom up, tried to get to the bris milah, couldn't get past the bris milah. Kept going up and down and couldn't do it. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu was full of snake slime all over the place. Yum. And Tzipora is watching this and wondering what in the world is going on. Vatzichru Tzipora Tzor, she takes out a knife. Vatzichru is Orla's Benel, she cuts off the Orla of her son. Vatagal Raglav, landed by the feet of the snake. And listen to this, Vatomer, she said, Kichasan Domi Matoli, Kichasan Domi Matoli, you caused my bridegroom's bloodshed. You caused my bridegroom's bloodshed. Now, that's a good line if we're dealing with an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, where you have like a line, you have to speak or say something out loud, like, you are killing my husband. And Tzipora's going out there and saying, like, now I kill you. You know, that's a good line. You know, that's one of those good lines. You can understand that, and whatever, that would be understood. Then by Yiruf Mimenu, the snake went away. Azomra, then she said, Chasan Damim Lamulos, a bridegroom's bloodshed was because of circumcision. Shkayach. Good line. What does that mean? What in the world is going on here? What is that talking about? So you look at Rashi and you expect Rashi's going to have to explain this over here. Of course he's going to explain it over here. Says Rashi over here, Chasan Damim. You caused my husband to be killed because of you. Moshe's not dead. Okay. Horig ishi atoli. You are killing my husband. That is completely redundant. Completely redundant over here. You caused my husband to be killed. You're killing my husband. Buddy, what in the world is going on here? You don't have to be so redundant. And he's not dead yet. Don't worry. The next pasuk, Amrat chasin damin lamulos, chasoni hayenirtzach al davar amila. My husband was killed because of the mila. What in the world is going on here? Shot is, the chasin is Hevel. The ish is Moshe Rabbeinu. The woman over here, Tzipora, is the second twin daughter. And the satan is Kayin. Tzipora says, I've been here before. I know what you're doing. I know that Kayin is trying to kill Hevel again. The satan is trying to kill Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Because he's accomplished two out of the three things that he's had to accomplish. He's killed the Mitzri. He's metaken the nefesh of Kayin. He's gotten Tzipora. He's metaken the ruach, the neshama, of Kayin. All he has to do is be metaken the ruach of Kayin. That's all he has to do. Fix up Korach. Now he's going down to Mitzrayim. He's going to fix it up. And once that happens, Kayin is gone. No more Tumah in the world. The Mashiach will come. The Satan's going to do everything in his power to stop Moshe Rabbeinu from doing such a thing. So what does he do? He tries swallowing up Moshe Rabbeinu and says, there's something wrong over here. He didn't get a bris milah. Which he didn't. He was born with a bris milah. But for some reason, he wasn't able to get past that part. He was able to do it by Hevel. He was able to swallow up Hevel, but he wasn't able to get past Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? The difference is, so that's what Tzipora was saying. You caused my chassan. Who's the chassan? The one without kids. Hevel was killed because of you. Horig ishi. Now you're killing my ish, my man. She didn't turn southern all of a sudden. You kill my man. She didn't turn southern. She's horig ishi atali. Now you're killing my man. Now you're killing Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, my husband, who I have kids from. What are you doing? So then she said, Amra chassan gam lamulos chassani hayanirtzach al Gavra Mila, she realized, my chasam was killed because he only had a bris mila, he didn't have a tafas dam bris. That extra little hatafas dam bris caused Moshe Rabbeinu to be saved and not be killed when they went up met up with him. Now do you understand the Rashi? That's the pshat behind the Rashi, but you need these five hakdamas. Without those five hakdamas, you're sitting there like, what? That's the five hakdamas. You need those five hakdamas, and that's how to understand that word. Now you understand why I say it? That's my favorite word of all time. I know, I realize, see, every word is my favorite word of all time. There are words that are my favorite words of all time. This is my favorite word of all time, because it has too much to it. There's way too much to it.
It's your favorite word.
No, I really do think that that's my favorite word.
What happened?
I really do think so. Oh, there is one. Arami Ovidavi is close. Arami Ovidavi is whatever. What happens after JC? Where you are right now. No, Korah, come on. Don't give me this. Another Medrash. Perakei Pasagalov. There are 400 entrances. There are 400 entrances into the door, into the palace of Paro. Into the palace of Paro. They're all covered with lions and bears that are held there in front of their doors with kishuf.
And tigers.
As soon as Moshe and Aaron were about to come into the doors, Gavriel tamed all the wild animals that were with kishuf and made them lick the feet of Moshe and Aaron. Now Moshe and Aaron, kishuf is magic, came inside. Moshe and Aaron came inside the palace, and it happened to be Paro's birthday. And everybody's sitting around, kings throughout everyone, sitting around, they're saying, happy birthday to you. And they each brought a special crown for Paro. Everybody brought their own special crown for Paro. And they were going to give it over to Paro. Hold on. They're going to give it over to Paro. As they waited, all of a sudden, Moshe and Aaron came walking inside. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu is 10 almost tall, 15 feet tall. That's a good amount. Good size, you know. Comes inside. Face is a radiating beauty. He's huge, radiating to be. Remember, Paro's only a foot and a half. Big discrepancy in between them. And then afterwards, aside from that, he went ahead and he's all the way up high and everything. And he's unbelievably beautiful, aside from everything. And he's like this huge, strong guy. And he's got lions and bears licking his feet. Lions and bears licking his feet, like, you know, they're taking care of him. So all the kings are so shocked by this. They go and they throw the crown and they throw it up on Moshe Rabbeinu's head. So that Moshe Rabbeinu gets all the crown to Paro. Paro is so shocked by the sight. We have to be a little bit grown up about this. That Paro all of a sudden needs to go to the bathroom. Gets shilshul. What that is he has to go to the bathroom. He's got the runs. He's got to go. The problem is that Paro is a god, according to his own admission, and he can't go to the bathroom. So where's he going to go? So he has a special hiding place right behind his palace, right behind his throne, where nobody knew about. He's able to go to the bathroom and cover it up, and everything's okay. So he quickly ran inside there and started going to the bathroom and started doing the runs. All of a sudden, he closed the door behind him and everything. All of a sudden, they hear a massive scream. 12 rats had bitten onto Paro's tushy and started to bite him as he was going to the bathroom. The guards hear the yelling, they knock down the door, and they see Paro sitting there, wallowing in his own filth throughout this entire bathroom, with 12 rats biting onto his backside, and all of them are looking at him, all the kings and everything, like, happy birthday. Happy birthday. It's been a great birthday. What's the shot? What's the shot? You know what the shot is? It's an unbelievable shot. The unbelievable shot is that, what did Paro do that was so bad? Paro originally, before Paro came along, the Jews and Bnei Yisrael, the Jews and Mitzrayim, they were peaceful together. They had shalom. Sometimes it's a bad thing, but there was shalom in between them, and everything was all good. Paro put his hand inside there, put his little hand inside there, and on a chaf, put it in his own hand. What did he do? He said, "Okay, guys, what do you say we build a massive building? Hey, I'll go with you guys." And he tricked everyone. And he put it in his own hand and started building up these buildings and everything. Obviously, he started first. I don't know what he did like a little Lego piece, you know. He did one Lego piece after the other. By the way, but he got involved in everything. And then eventually the Mitzrayim stopped and they made it a slavery for the Jews for them to build up the whole walls by themselves. So Paro added on his chaf, his palm, the palm of his own hand, added on his own hand into the shalom, put the chaf inside there, and he called it, instead of shalom, he switched around the letters a little bit, shalom plus chaf becomes a michshol, made it a stumbling block for Bnei Yisrael, a stumbling block for them to be messed up, for them to become slaves from then on. So Kadosh Baruch Hu said, oh yeah, you're going to add on a chaf? I'll add on a chaf. You want to take care of the Ivrim, the 12 shvatim of the Ivrim of the Jews out there? I'm going to add on a chaf, and it's going to be achbarim. And you're going to have 12 rats that are going to take care of you. And those are the 12 rats that went up and bit him at that moment because of the Ivrim, because of that extra chaff that he had added on. And guys, I'm going to end off with one last thing over here.
Why can't a god defecate?
So why don't they bite off his hand?
That's a question of what Paro meant. Paro said that he was a god and he couldn't defecate. That was his own thing.
So why don't they bite off his hand?
Either way, what?
Why don't they bite off his hand?
Oh, that's another thing. That area. Sometimes, this is a massive lesson. Sometimes Hashem doesn't answer our tefillos. You daven for something, you daven really, really hard. You expect it to be answered. And you sit afterward and you say, well, look, it never got answered. You asked for something, you really, really wanted it. You daven for somebody who was sick, didn't get better. You daven for money because you really needed money for some reason, you didn't get it. You davened that something should you get a good grade in your test for this or that or whatever it is, and you didn't get it. What's the pshat? What do you do after that happens? What do you say to yourself? Now, obviously, you have to say it's for the best. How do we know that? The lesson is from this week's parsha. When Miriam was standing on the outside of Yam Suf, watching what was going to happen to Moshe Rabbeinu, she's watching what could happen to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is stuck in the Suf. And all of a sudden, Miriam sees Bas Paro, the daughter of Paro, the person who made the decree in the first place, come outside and go and dip herself inside the river. She didn't know that Basia was trying to make herself a Jew, that she was being Megayer herself at that moment. She had no idea. What do you think she was davening for at that moment when she saw that Bas Paro was coming close to finding Moshe Rabbeinu? Miss Stoma, the davening that she said was, please, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't let Bas Paro see Moshe Rabbeinu. Don't let Bas Paro, anybody but Bas Paro, let anyone else see Moshe. And yet, was that tefillah answer?
No.
Because obviously Basia saw Moshe Rabbeinu, took Moshe Rabbeinu, and did an unbelievable thing. Named him a Hebrew name. She was being Megayer at the time. And then gave him over to Yocheved. Said he would grow up in Yocheved and Amram's household for 20 years. But still be known as the child of Basia Bas Paro. An unbelievable thing that she did. But can you imagine what Miriam was thinking in the beginning? But her tefillah wasn't answered. What we're supposed to think is not only that a Kadosh Baruch Hu does it for the best, but there's always a reason why our tefillahs aren't answered. There's a reason why tefillahs aren't answered. Will we get to know them? Maybe 5 years from now, you'll sit there and you'll be like, oh, that's why. Now I understand. But you won't understand at the time. Do you regret it? Never. Never, ever regret it. If Miriam would have regretted it, who knows what would have happened? If Miriam would have said, oh, gosh darn it, God, I thought you were with me. If she would have said that, then who knows what would have happened. But because she didn't, she said, Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's obviously your will for this to be this way. Please let everything happen in the best way. Everything good happened. It's a way to daven. You daven in the morning. You daven for what you need. You daven for everything that you think you need. But you have to say to yourself, if it doesn't happen, I understand that. If you lose something, and this happened in this basement, well, it happened in that basement, sitting there, it's a crazy story. You guys all know Isaac Goldsmith. I love this story. It's one of the greatest stories. Isaac Goldsmith comes into the basement. This is a couple years ago at Yeshivat HaKayetz. And he said to me, I think it was his Rebbe at Yeshivat HaKayetz. Either way, I'm sitting in the basement. I'm learning with a guy, sitting with your brother, with Yossi Polstein. And we're sitting in the basement. We're learning together. And then all of a sudden he comes in. And he's like, Rebbe, I can't find my Chumash. And this is Chumash. He kept writing inside it. He has English words all over. He really needs this Chumash. So I said to him, okay, fine. Isaac, I've heard this before. Put in $5 into the tzedakah box. $5, laptop, whatever you have, you know. Put in a nice amount of money into the tzedakah box. And say the following. Say, I'm giving this tzedakah, almanas, on condition that I find my chumash. However, if I don't find my chumash, I don't regret the mitzvah. I don't take back the $5. Give me the $5 anyway. But I'm doing it on condition that I find my chumash. So he sits there, and you see him like going up to the thing, and he was Isaac even back then, you know, even before this all that, but he was like concentrating, and he puts it inside. 25 seconds later, he leaves the base medrash. 25 seconds later, he comes back inside the base medrash, and he goes to me and he says, I found it. What happened? He goes into the lunchroom, and he sees there's one chair that's a little bit askew, one chair that's like a little bit off. So he goes and he puts that chair and he puts it right in. On the seat right next to it was the chumash. Right next to it, on the seat, under the table, was the chumash. He goes and he picks it up and he runs over. 35 seconds later. You know what that is? It's the tefillah. But you don't regret what you did. It's a goyish way to daven. And if you don't get it, then you regret it. And forget about it. That's it. I can't believe I daven. I can't believe I give this korban. It's so stupid. I can't believe I did this. A Jew's way is to do it. And if it's not supposed to be that way, you say, okay, God didn't want it this way. It's obviously for the best. To say it's all for the best. All right, guys, we're going to end with that. Have a good Shabbos.